Chapter 7.
Fayette Kellen waited for us on our assigned landing pad when we arrived on Pasher. Waited on Nakari and the Harvester, anyway, along with a small throng of his employees. R2 and I joined them once we'd secured the Desert Jewel. Nakari had evidently given her father a quick summary of events, because as I stepped up to join them, he boomed,
"Pilot! Well met and welcome! I'm told you distinguished yourself on Fex."
That might have been stretching the account a bit far, since I had accomplished little beyond my own survival, but his eyes dropped to R2, and he continued before I could reply.
"Your droid has erased all the data provided earlier."
"R2, please delete the files Mr. Kellen gave us." The droid beeped in acknowledgement, and Kellen chuckled.
"Good, good! But forgive me if I would like some stronger assurance that my interests are protected."
His sausage fingers fished a data chip out of his tunic pocket, and he handed it to me.
"I had this prepared for your arrival. It will confirm the erasure of all files I gave you in your droid's memory, and erase any that accidentally remain. Nothing more."
Refusing to run the chip would only invite suspicion when I had already promised to erase everything. So I inserted it, and R2 ran the program, spitting it back out in a few seconds. Nakari winked at me, however, indicating that perhaps she had her own backup of the Fexian coordinates stored somewhere.
"Excellent!"
Kellen said. His hand danced about on his personal data pad, and he said,
"I'm depositing a goodly sum into an escrow account, which your droids may access and distribute to you both. And I thank you for returning my ship, my crew, both living and deceased, and alien life that will delight my scientists."
Sensing that he was about to turn his attention elsewhere and dismiss us, Nakari said,
"Daddy, don't send anyone else there until you read my full report. Those things could be sentient. And even if you ignore that, you have to upgrade the armor's mobility."
He placed a hand on her shoulder.
"I will digest all you have written before acting further. My primary concern now is that you see a surgeon about that hand. See where my minions come? Go with them."
"What?" An ambulance coasted to a stop near the ship, and two earnest medics hopped out, asking Fayette Kellen who was hurt.
"Take my daughter to the finest surgeon post-haste and bill it to me. Go!"
"Daddy, wait. What about Luke?"
"Fear not. Your pilot will be allowed to rest in comfort until you are ready to depart."
"Don't leave without me, Luke,"
she called over her shoulder as the paramedics led her to the ambulance.
"I won't,"
I said, though I wondered if she would be able to accompany me on the mission to smuggle the Given off Deenon. She'd be fine eventually, but I doubted she would be 100% anytime soon. Admiral Akbar had given us some slack time in our operation window, but not much. Fayette Kellen turned to me, his mouth quirked upward in a fond grin.
"She will not be long, pilot. You'll see. If she is not bandaged and ready to leave in the morning, I will be very surprised."
His fingers massaged his data pad again as he spoke.
"In the meantime, please stay the evening in Pasha's finest hotel, at my expense. I am summoning an escort to take you there. Have your droid search for the file Skywalker. Encryption key Jewel Pilot, and you will find the funds I spoke of, which you may then transfer wherever you please. Thank you for your service to me and my daughter. May the stars keep you safe."
Before I could reply, he turned and strode with impressive speed to the workers unloading the cargo bay of the Harvester, bawling out orders and leaving me with my mouth open. R2-D2 spat out a stream of digital hoots that I imagined to be a wry comment. "Looks like we get a night off from the war, R2. Don't tell 3PO, okay? We'll never hear the end of it. The hotel was indeed quite a luxurious affair. But once I tried out the bed, I didn't find much use for its other amenities. The mattress was so comfortable, and I was so exhausted that I fell asleep in my clothes, and R2 had to wake me in the morning. It didn't bother me to miss out on the excess and splendor, though. A good night's sleep at that point was the height of luxury to me. A message from Nakari waited for me at the front desk. "Hurry up! I'm waiting at the ship." "Come on, R2. We have weapons to buy." The money Fayette Kellen had paid us was quite an impressive sum. We'd need all of it for upgrades to the Desert Jewel, but the prospect of custom surprises was excitement enough for me. The Alliance rarely had the funds or the will to do anything unusual. Nakari's left hand, encased in a thin protective sheath full of Bacta, waved at me from the ship's loading ramp.
"Those must have been some sweet dreams," she said with a smile.
"Yeah, I feel rested. How about you?"
"High on meds and days away from getting back full use of my hand, but otherwise functional and happy to be here."
"Can you still fire your rifle?"
"Maybe not so well on the run, but sniping from a fixed position where I can use my elbow for support should be fine."
"Great. Any ideas where you want to go for upgrades?"
"I was going to ask you."
I considered. It had been a few days since that Imperial alert on the Desert Jewel. I doubted anyone in the Chekku Enclave would be looking for it now. But just in case, we'd better take steps to throw off suspicion. "Any place on Pasher we can get the jewel painted? We'd have to do it anyway before going to Deenan." Nakari shrugged.
"Sure, we can find a place."
"Then how do you feel about outfitting on Rhodia? I just set up a contact there, and they have everything we need."
"Sounds fine to me."
We found a man obscured in a cloud of cigarra smoke who had a team of friends willing to do a rush paint job on the jewel, finishing it by that afternoon. Nakari had him change the red and silver scheme to blue and gold. Once we were on our way and traveling through hyperspace, I had R2 display the catalog of Uthiel outfitters in the cockpit, and we picked out the weapons we thought would come in handy against Imperials. We checked the prices against the balance in our accounts and had to dial back our wish list somewhat, but I thought we'd still have a fearsome ship when the additions were complete. The problem was that Tanich Suunta was not expecting our arrival, and while we were allowed to land at the spaceport outside the Chekku Enclave, we were not exactly welcomed. Unlike my first visit, where I was politely greeted and escorted to Uthiel Outfitters, I was accosted almost as soon as I took my first breath of reeky Rhodian air. A belligerent male with blue skin and a teal jumpsuit demanded to know my business from the bottom of the ramp. "We're here to buy weapons from Uthiel Outfitters," I said.
"For a ship like this? No, you're not."
"Of course we are."
"Uthiel Outfitters doesn't outfit interstellar ships. They supply hunters and their small speeders. Maybe some atmospheric craft. You've got the wrong company. Try the Chatsa clan on the other continent. They can take care of you."
"No, look, I need to see Tanich Suunta. She knows me and what I'm looking for."
"I don't know anybody by that name."
"Well, somebody does."
He held up a data pad.
"See this? It contains a roster of everyone in the Chekku clan, and there's no Tanich Suunta here. You're mistaken. You'd best find your weapon somewhere else, because we don't have them."
Nakari stepped behind me, and her voice floated over my back.
"What's the trouble, Luke?"
"I'm not sure of anything except that this fellow wants us to leave. Says my contact doesn't exist, and the company I'm to deal with doesn't have the weapons we saw in the catalog."
"Is there any possibility he could be right, and you were duped before?"
"I suppose it's possible."
That whole business could have been an extremely elaborate Imperial sting, with a huge number of agents in on the operation.
but it wasn't likely. It was more likely that this particular Rodian had a different agenda. There had to be a way around him without escalating to something unpleasant. And I suddenly remembered that perhaps there was. Taking a deep breath and closing my eyes, I reached out to the Force and then opened my eyes again, focusing on the Rodian and willing him to accept what I said. "We're here to do business with Uthiel Outfitters." The Rodian's antennae dipped, and he chopped the air with his hand.
"And I already told you, they can't handle interstellar outfitting. You'll have to go visit the Chatsa."
That clearly hadn't worked. But I had forgotten something that perhaps would make a difference. When Ben had told the stormtroopers in Mos Eisley that R2 and 3PO weren't the droids they were looking for, he had used a small hand gesture with it, as if to wave away the troopers' concerns.
"You don't need to worry about us," I said, moving my hand in a tiny arc and rippling my fingers in a wave as I concentrated on exerting my will. "Poodoo if I don't. I have ships on my list coming in here with legitimate business, and I can use the berth. Get going, would you? You're wasting my time."
I had to try again.
"You don't need to worry about us," I said, and repeated the hand gesture. "Look, I know humans are slow sometimes, but I'm starting to think you're exceptional."
Behind me, Nakari whispered, "Luke, what are you doing?" "Wasting everyone's time, apparently," I whispered back. The Rodian's calm squawked a harsh alert at him, and he thumbed it, receiving a throaty stream of language that I didn't understand. He replied with a curt acknowledgement, and said to me as he put the comm away,
"That changes things. Welcome back to Rodia, Master Skywalker. If you would please follow me, I'll take you to Tanich Sunta."
"What? You said there was no such person."
"And now I'm saying I'll take you to her. Try to keep up."
"Who are you?" The Rodian didn't answer, but turned and walked away, waving at us to follow. Nakari gave me a gentle nudge, and I descended the ramp, calling to R2 to join us. Trailing the rude Rodian in teal, I thought perhaps I would forever associate the color with poor manners. But I realized after I'd had time to cool down that I was more frustrated with my failure than truly annoyed with our guide. I knew Ben had done something to the minds of those stormtroopers, but I didn't know what it was or even what he called it. He said the Force could influence the weak-willed or something like that, but I was so poorly trained that I didn't know if I'd done it correctly and the Rodian was simply too strong, or if I'd done it incorrectly. It only reinforced how badly I needed someone to train me. The path we took through the Rodian Bazaar was different, but the result was the same. We wound up in a dimly lit hidden passage, with Tanich Sunta willing to speak frankly.
"Apologies for the misunderstanding at the spaceport," she said. "For security reasons, we keep our illicit commerce on a need-to-know basis, and until your arrival, that worker had no need to know who you were."
"It's all right," I said, and introduced her to Nakari. Sunta greeted her and said,
"How may I be of service today?"
We had R2 play back the catalog entries of the weapons we wanted, and flashed a running total of the prices, explaining that we'd like all of them installed on the Desert Jewel as soon as possible.
"There will be labor charges, of course," Sunta reminded us.
She got busy with her datapad and showed me a figure. I nodded at her and said, "We allowed for that."
"Excellent. And how will you be paying?"
We offered to pay half of the total on deposit immediately, the balance to be paid upon completion and inspection of systems. Consider it a demonstration of Uthiel Outfitter's capabilities to the Alliance, I said. I authorized R2 to make the initial payment, and Sunta made a pleased gurgle when her datapad confirmed the transfer of funds.
Oh, excellent, Master Skywalker. We shall have you armed and airborne before sundown tomorrow.